You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Visit GameSenseAB.ca to find out more. Start with the Raptors. And you know, we talked about it at the start of the year. I was like, geez, like in the NBA, like the Raptors don't really have a number one. They got, I think, a number two in Siakam, but I don't think he's a number one. There's talk about Fred VanVleet. I've never thought Fred VanVleet was as good as Kyle Lowry. Not as he's bad, he's just not as good. And so do you think there'd be a market for Fred VanVleet? Do you think they could trade him? And would they trade him? Should they trade him? What kind of return would you get?
It's a great question, because VanVleet does not fit the profile of the typical NBA player, Jason. He's not physically the kind of player that general managers seem to salivate over. You know, he's not long, athletic, explosive, but he's very crafty. He's starting to play better. He really was in a bit of a slump. So could he get value? I think so. Would they get, though, the kind of value that would automatically make the team better? I don't know, because VanVleet is unusual. I don't know what other teams would be looking at him and saying, Fred fits the profile of the type of player that we need to propel ourselves to a championship. I think, though, I'm guessing a jury is a little more interested in fielding offers and looking at possible scenarios, because VanVleet turned down a very large contract extension because he didn't feel he was giving his market value. So I don't know how that affects management, particularly since his play hasn't been that consistent. So, like I said, he's not a no-brainer in terms of a trade that would get you value that would improve the team immediately, but he's certainly a compelling player, and I'm sure a jury is looking at what scenarios might be available.
Yeah, so in this scenario, because I've been reading some articles about that, we talk about moving Fred. Like, isn't part of the problem is that Fred maybe is getting tired because he's playing so much and they have really no one behind him? So would it be like, okay, we're just going to move this guy and we'll figure something out in the offseason?
Could be. I think the Raptors have a real dilemma right now. The news that Otto Porter, their big signing in the offseason, part of the Golden State NBA champs, you know, eight games, and now he's done for the year because he has to have foot surgery. That's been a bust. The bench in general has been a bust. And I think Nick Nurse is taking more heat than he would have ever expected he'd be taking as the Raptors coach right now, because to your point, Jason, he's wearing the starters out. And I don't know if the bench is that bad or if just Nurse doesn't trust them enough. I really don't know what the answer is right now. But to your point, is Fred tired? Yes, he definitely is. But he could go to another team, have limited minutes, and if he was on a team that had some depth or a team that was rebuilding, maybe they could, marginalize the type of time that he has to play on the court right now.
It will be interesting to see what they do with him, and maybe I'm assuming moving him would depend on what type of package they would get.
But they gotta. Don't you feel they have to do something though, Jason?
Like, oh yeah.
Do you get that feeling like this just isn't going to work?
No, because if you keep everybody, you come into next season, it's going to be the same thing, right? Like Otto Porter Jr., just a season-ending injury, so I would assume that probably might impact their deadline plans, though, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You just have this sense that this team is not going to duplicate what they did last year. Their depth of their team just doesn't seem enough. Doesn't seem to be adding enough to what they're doing, and the starters are playing way too much. So you're absolutely right. They're going to have to do something.
What about OG? You know, obviously he's a very good defender. And does he have more value on the team, or does he have more value for what you could get for him and try to, you know, backfill some of these holes that they're dealing with?
Well, I think that's a compelling player to look at. Again, like I like OG. I don't love him. I think, you know, before Siakam came back, he had better numbers. He's a reliable, steady player, good defender, good rebounder, leads the NBA in steals. So he's a good player. So But he's not a player you build around. And I think that's what the Raptors are struggling with right now, Jason. And so I think you have to look at what kind of value or package that you could get for both OG and for Van Fleet. I guess you stick with Scotty and Pascal and say they're your cornerstone pieces that you're going to build around because you don't want to blow everything up. And then those two players are marketable commodities that they really have to look at what their options are because they have to make moves.
Paul Sir joins us. Paul, the scoring leaders right now in the NBA, man, they're firing all over the place. It's like a pointorama right now. The NBA similar to the NHL.
Yeah, it's like the old NBA Jam game. Like when you're looking, you've got five guys averaging over 30 a game. It's unbelievable. I've never seen anything like this. I think, you know, it's a combination of the skill sets of these players, the type of NBA, the type of defense that you have to play in the NBA. But I really think because of the type of defense you have to play in the NBA, that the offensive skill development of the best players in the NBA is just off the charts. My gosh, Doncic is unbelievable, and our Canadian Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, these guys are incredible. I mean, you've got Zion Williamson, your guy, Strutt, having a great year, and he's like 18th in scoring, scoring almost 27 a game. You know, I mean, yeah. It's just unbelievable the number of players that are just putting huge, huge numbers up every night.
Now, why do you say you have to play defense a certain way today in the NBA? Elaborate on that.
Well, it reminds me when I used to coach when my kids were little. We called mini boys. Now it's under 11. Yeah, no, and your opponent, you couldn't just have it spinning in middle of the key. You had to try to teach kids the guard. Like the NBA has very strict guidelines about, you know, being close to your player, defensive 3 seconds, which for a basketball purist is just fingernails on a blackboard. But you know, you've got guys dancing in and out of the lane, and it's great though for offense because guys can't park in the lane. If you had Rudy Gobert standing in the middle of a 2-3 zone, you're not going to have the kind of numbers that we're seeing right now. But because he can't, and this I think is the bigger reason, the fives now, thanks to Dirk Nowitzki, he taught that seven footers can shoot threes, and that it's no longer just back to the basket, low post basketball. There's far too little of that in the NBA. So you've got to guard your man closely. And you can't have a big guy parking in the lane to block shots. So there's a lot of attack lanes. And these guys are just so good in terms of when they get around their man and getting to the basket, drawing fouls and the variety of shots. It just created this offensive free-for-all.
You know, when you look at the Western Conference, the top four teams, Denver, Memphis, New Orleans, and Dallas, they have some significant firepower as far as star power, as do Golden State, you know, L.A., you can debate about that, and, you know, down you go. But of those top four teams, which team do you think is positioned best with their supporting cast to have a significant run in the playoffs?
Well, I think Denver is very good. I think they're going to be very tough down the stretch, but I think I'd have to give the nod to Memphis. I think their bench, number 6 through 10, might be the best in the West right now. I mean, you have a guy like Brandon Clark, the Canadian who played at Gonzaga. He's getting, not big minutes, but let's say around 20 a game, but he's always in double figures, and he's always got 8 to 10 or 12 rebounds. Like, the numbers, can you imagine what the Raptors could do with a guy like that? If you had somebody like that coming off the bench? Memphis just seems to have a ton of those. The difficulty in the West is Nikola Jokic. Third in the league in assists, putting up triple-doubles with great regularity. You've got Jamal Murray getting better and better. And they have a solid bench. But I would give the nod to Memphis.
Paul, quickly, Canadians in the draft. It's not going to be the top-end talent maybe as we saw last year, but any depth guys to look for?
Well, I mean, you've got the intriguing 7-4 guy from number one Purdue, Zach Edey, who's having a great year. He's putting up huge numbers, and he just keeps getting better and better. The thing with him at 7-4, he's not the prototypical NBA guy, but he hasn't been playing basketball that long. And he just, like I said, keeps getting better and better. I think the most intriguing prospect right now looks like Leonard Miller, who just made to the G League. He seems to have that, that stereotypic NBA talent, long, athletic, very diverse, very versatile. So he might be one of those depth guys that you're referring to. There's a guard out of Texas named Marcus Carr. He kind of jumped around to some NCAA schools. But he's got NBA speed, but I don't think he has like the skill set of a Ja Morant, who you would compare him to physically. But you never know. He might be one of those guys like Andrew Nembhard and get on a team and make a contribution.
Great stuff, Paul. We appreciate it as always, man. Have an awesome week.
You as well, guys. Take care. Thanks for the time.